if you are. Now, if you're like most people trying to keep fit, you probably know the feeling of the modern gym. It's just so isolating.
It is.
You walk in, you see the sea of machines, you plug your headphones in, and for an hour you're just counting reps, trying to hit some number. You leave physically tired, maybe, but you don't really feel mentally richer. You haven't really learned anything.
It's the transactional model of fitness, exactly. We treat exercise like it's banking. You deposit calories and effort, and you hope to withdraw some vague promise of health.
That's a great way to put it.
But the whole process is so mechanical, it's rigid, and frankly, a lot of the time it's just soul-crushing. To use an analogy, it's like painting by numbers for your body. You follow the structure, you get a result, sure, but you don't actually learn about color theory or composition. You don't learn how to improvise.
And that's the key, isn't it? What if movement wasn't just conditioning, but actual education? Today, we're doing a deep dive into the philosophy of Sets Ryu, a group that calls itself a functional education specialist.
Yes, and they're really reframing this whole thing, turning the gym floor into a classroom and sweat into, well, transferable knowledge.
So our mission today is to unpack what they call functional education, or FE, and show how it creates something they call physical fluency.
And their guiding motto is simple, but it's really powerful. Sound in body, sound in mind. It's about transforming simple movements into genuine adaptive life skills. We're moving beyond just being fit to becoming physically literate.
Okay, I think we need to slow down there on that term physical fluency, because for a lot of people, that's going to sound like being an elite athlete, which is, intimidating.
Not at all. Think of it like language. You can memorize a few phrases, but the second the conversation goes off script, you freeze up. Fluency is the ability to improvise, to adapt your vocabulary, to solve problems on the fly. Physical fluency is the same thing. It's being able to solve physical problems in unfamiliar situations.
Like catching yourself on ice or.
Or carrying a weirdly shaped piece of furniture up the stairs. Or reacting when you're under pressure. That's fluency.
So how do they structure this? Is it just a collection of movements, or is there an actual curriculum?
Oh, it's definitely a curriculum. The methodology says functional education has to meet four criteria. First, it has to be experiential. You learn by doing. It must be transferable, so the skills apply in different contexts. It has to be adaptive. You learn how to succeed, but crucially, also how to recover when you fail.
And the last one.
And finally, it has to be holistic. So integrating the physical, mental, and social sides of things. This is the difference between, say, renting a workout and truly owning your movement.
That really clicks for me. It treats the body like a problem-solving tool, not just a machine. And this whole thing is structured around three pillars: safe, fast, and HLLP. We're going to dig into how those work together. So let's ground ourselves first in the basics. Functional exercise itself. We've all been told to isolate muscles, bicep day, leg day. This approach rejects that,
It
right?
absolutely does. I mean, when are you ever in real life just using your bicep? When you lift a child or carry groceries, your body is working as one single unit.
A complete system.
Exactly. So functional exercise prioritizes those compound integrated movements. And critically, it focuses on what are called closed chain movements.
Okay, let's define that. Closed chain sounds a bit like technical jargon.
It's pretty simple. An open chain movement is where the end of your limb is free, like a leg extension or a bench press. A closed chain movement is where your hand or foot is fixed against a surface.
Like a push-up or a squat.
Exactly. Your hands are fixed on the floor, your feet are fixed on the floor. And when you do that, you force dozens of muscle groups to stabilize and coordinate and communicate all at once. That's what builds usable resilient strength.
It sounds like it's training the nervous system to cooperate, not just training the size of one muscle.
That is precisely the goal.
Yep.
And this whole philosophy is put into practice through their three pillars. So you have safe, which is sports and street art activities, think parkour and self-defense. Then fast, which is fitness and strength exercise, so conditioning and mobility. And finally, HELP, which is the education and development arm. That's where they apply this learning to professional skills and risk management.
I want to jump right into safe, especially parkour. Because for most people, parkour is just watching reckless people jump off very tall buildings on YouTube.
And that viral stuff is the least intelligent version of the sport, honestly.
Yeah.
Authentic parkour is defined as the art of intelligent, efficient movement. It's all about minimizing risk and maximizing efficiency. It's training the brain first.
So how is the city a living textbook? What does that environment teach you cognitively?
Well, think about it. Every obstacle demands brain work. You are constantly assessing spatial literacy. How far is that jump, really? You're gauging friction. Is that wet surface going to hold my grip?
Right, you're calculating.
You're calculating energy cost. If I make this leap, will I have enough left to get over that wall? It requires strategic planning and risk assessment before you even move. It's like a chess game played with your entire body.
I can see how that trains decision-making under high-stakes conditions. And the sources mentioned this also addresses one of our biggest inhibitors, fear.
Absolutely. Authentic training doesn't just ignore fear, it manages it. They teach you to acknowledge it, to name the specific anxiety, to measure the real threat versus the perceived threat.
And then you break it down.
You break it down. You take a big, scary jump, and you practice it in smaller, safer pieces until you build competence. That process, acknowledging, assessing, and overcoming fear, that's a profoundly transferable life skill.
That systematic approach to fear brings us perfectly to the second part of self-defense. If functional fitness is about real-life readiness, then safety has to be part of it.
Correct. And let's be really clear here. The goal is not winning fights.
No.
The focus is on awareness, de-escalation, and most importantly, efficient escape.
Right.
The whole philosophy is captured in what they call the gingerbread man principle. Release, respond, run.
Release, respond, run.
If you can't de-escalate, you release yourself from a grip, you respond quickly to create space, and then you run. Getting to safety is the ultimate win.
And the system they use, Lekkon Jitsu, it sounds like it's blending a lot of different disciplines.
It's a true blend designed for modern situations. It pulls from jiu-jitsu, Shorinji Kenpo, Filipino arts, focusing on joint locks, escapes. But crucially, it also integrates neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, for de-escalation.
So the verbal skills are trained right alongside the physical ones.
Exactly. Body language, tone, verbal cues, it's all part of the same system.
Yeah.
And when you consider that this is sometimes taught in schools where, you know, violence is on the rise, this kind of escape-focused training is just necessary.
Right. It really highlights why the training has to be adaptive and holistic. It's not just about getting strong. It's about navigating a complex world intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's move to the fast pillar, fitness and strength. We've said it avoids machines. But they take that even further with what they call the human multi-gym. That sounds really intimate, maybe even risky. How does it work?
This is one of the most radical and, I think, socially transformative ideas. Instead of relying on weights, you use each other, your partner's body weight, and their collaborative resistance. That's the equipment.
Can you give me a concrete example? It's hard to picture.
Okay, so imagine a squat, but instead of a barbell on your back, your partner is providing controlled resistance from behind. Or maybe you're pressing your partner's weight up. If you move too fast, they have to adapt instantly. You have to communicate.
So it's live resistance.
It's live, constantly adapting resistance. It forces communication.
Which means the benefit isn't just physical strength. It requires intense focus and deep physical trust.
Precisely. You are building functional strength, yes, but at the same time, you're fostering profound psychological trust. When your partner's safety depends on your attention and your clear cues, you're fighting back against that digital isolation we all feel. You're creating real interdependence.
That makes the shift from fast to the last pillar, HELP, much clearer. Mm. Because the skills you build in that kind of environment must be incredibly valuable in the professional world.
Absolutely. The HELP pillar is all about proving that physical fluency translates directly into professional competence.
So lay out those analogies for us, the cognitive transfer.
Let's go back to parkour. Assessing a complex environment, analyzing multiple routes, choosing the most efficient path forward. What is that if not project management?
Right, it's identical.
If you can manage the risks of vaulting a gap under physical stress, you are training yourself to assess business risks under market uncertainty. The skill set is the same, adaptive decision making under load.
And what other skills from these practices translate to, you know, a desk job?
Mental focus under physical load is a huge one. They use practices like Kundal, fighting fit, which trains you to stay clear-headed when your body is exhausted.
Okay.
And they also tackle desk fatigue head-on with active meditation, like their grounded and centered practices. These are simple 5-minute techniques to help you recenter and manage stress right at your desk.
That seems like a direct line to better productivity. So let's talk about the ROI for companies that integrate this kind of thing.
The business case is compelling. I mean, the numbers are stark. Sources show that wellness programs with regular physical activity can reduce absenteeism by up to 80%.
80%? That's massive.
Think of the cost savings. Stress, burnout, injuries. Those are huge drivers of sick days. When you teach resilience and stability, those numbers just plummet.
And beyond just keeping people at work, there are the long-term healthcare cost savings.
Immense. Organizations have seen up to a 30% decrease in overall healthcare costs. The big case study is Johnson & Johnson. They saved a reported $250 million over 6 years, directly linked to their wellness initiatives.
So this isn't just a nice-to-have perk, it's a strategic financial choice.
It's turning a cost center wellness into a capability center. And that capability goes beyond the balance sheet, right into the company culture.
How so?
When colleagues do the human multi-gym or share that fear training, it strengthens psychological safety. Job titles don't matter when you're relying on your boss to steady you. That shared vulnerability breaks down hierarchies and builds genuine trust.
Building trust through shared physical challenge, that's a powerful idea. Okay, finally, let's talk about access. They've made a choice to operate out of public facilities, like the one in Espoo. Why democratize access like this?
It's fundamental to their mission. By using municipal facilities, they keep prices affordable. You're paying local rates, not luxury gym prices.
So it's not just for the wealthy.
Exactly. It ensures physical fluency isn't a benefit reserved for an elite few. It really embodies their motto: collaboration without tiers, training without frontiers.
This whole deep dive has shown that when you turn movement into education, you gain so much more than muscle. You get confidence, you develop real-world awareness, and you join a supportive community. It really is life skills for life.
The key finding here is that competence is competence, no matter the domain. The skills you forge in a challenging physical environment, solving a parkour puzzle, mastering de-escalation, they are universally applicable. They transfer seamlessly to a professional crisis or a high-pressure negotiation.
We talked about how this lets a football player use martial arts knowledge to disrupt an opponent's balance because they understand leverage in a different way. So we'll leave you with this final thought to chew on.
Mm-hmm.
What specialized isolated skill do you already have? Maybe it's advanced cooking or coding or project management that you could consciously leverage for unexpected success in a totally different part of your life if you just reframed it as transferable competence.
If learning could be physical, playful, creative, and socially transformative all at once, would you dive in?
We certainly hope this deep dive encourages you to find out. We'll see you next time.